Sian Morgan Lloyd, dwi'n darlithio yn Jomec ym Mhrifysgol Caerdydd, ac dwi wedi trefnu'r panel yma heddi. Dwi'n eistedd ar grŵp IWA Media Policy Group. Does dim amheuaeth, mae'n gyfnod tyngedfennol i ddyfodol newyddiadureth, ac yn fwy nag erioed dwi'n teimlo mae angen i ni gael y drafodaeth yma, ac mae angen i ni gael hi yng Nghymru. Sut mae sicrhau dyfodol newyddiadureth a safon a hynny yn y ddwy iaith? As we heard this morning, a rather positive outlook from Claire Enders, who believes professional journalism will survive in Wales. But she noted that investigative journalism is in decline, and as we all know, there are significant challenges linked to advertising revenue and consumer consumption habits. But surely the events of the past year prove that it's more important than ever that people understand what's going on in the world, what's going on in their country, and what's going on in their communities. To have trusted sources and journalists who uphold the values and principles of journalism, who scrutinise and who dig for the truth and who report on an evolving and devolving Wales. And in an industry where there's increasing uncertainty and rapid change, we're at a crossroads of sorts where people don't necessarily know what's going to happen next. But as somebody now who is trusted to develop and train the next generation, many of whom aspire to be journalists, for me, it's so important that we do have this conversation and that we focus on the future of professional journalism in Wales and attempt to find solutions and opportunities. So I hope this panel can shine a light on what the future might hold, and we are very grateful to them. They are Phil Henfrey, who is head of news and programmes for ITV Cymru Wales. Next to him, we've got Paul Rowland, who is editor-in-chief Media Wales. Emma Mees, who is the manager of the Centre for Community Journalism at Cardiff University, and we've got Carmon Rhys, who's deputy head of news and current affairs, BBC Cymru Wales. And our chair, Gitto Harry, needs no introduction. I know he's had a nightmare train journey to get here today, so we're very grateful to you. And without further ado, what's the story? Will professional journalism in Wales survive?
Pnawn da, diolch fawr iawn i bawb am ddod, diolch am wahoddi yma. It's a real pleasure to be back in my hometown, the place where I first had my interest in journalism kindled and nurtured, a place where I came back to after university to be trained as a journalist, a place where I started my career as a journalist, and a place that I still think is crucial to the future of journalism. We meet and we have this debate on a critical day where in the last couple of hours a great big thing has happened, a terrible thing in my view, but a great event of historical significance has happened. And if ever there was a need for journalism and world-class professional journalism that is trusted, that is reliable, that is responsible and objective, then now is that time. And on the way down, I was just looking at the coverage of Brexit. Yes, I want to see the picture of Theresa May in the Times. Yes, I want to know that Port Talbot is the town in Wales that will suffer most, presumably, from Brexit. Yes, I'm interested in the debate in the Assembly about whether the £2 billion price tag of Brexit for Wales is exaggerated or not. And yes, I'm interested in the site of the next brewery for brains in my hometown, which was reported in Wales Online today. That's interesting too. So in journalism, we want to reflect the different angles, the different stories, the different takes on things. That is catered for at the moment. And we have the sort of bedrocks of Welsh journalism, or representatives of them, on stage here. I don't want to put too much pressure on you. But we also look at sources of news now. I looked at Twitter with great amusement on the way down, from people saying this is a kamikaze day, we're going over the edge of the cliff, to my dream has come true from Nigel Farage. And BuzzFeed saying this is Brexmas Day, you know, to reflect a whole lot of things, including that delicious quote by God, Gus O'Donnell on this occasion, who just said, you know, we're about to jump out of a plane with a parachute designed by the people driving the plane, who want to make sure nobody else jumps out of the plane after you. Fantastic quote. So anyway, without further ado, what I want to explore over the next half hour, which I hope will be interesting to all of you here, is whether we can sustain that range of journalism that you can rely on, that covers all those bases, from so-called UK-wide, some call it national, I call it UK-wide, to national, in my view, is Welsh, to regional, which will be parts of Wales, to local, and right down to community. So we'll start maybe with, who wants to go first? Let's start maybe to my left, and just ask is there the appetite for this range, this diversity, this professional journalism? And will that appetite survive until, when did we say, 2025?
Well, it will certainly survive till 2024 on ITV.
Because you have to keep it going till then under licence.
Yeah.
4 hours a week.
Yeah, I think when we ever sort of talk about this, let's just recall what it is that ITV Wales does. In a Welsh context, it provides competition to the BBC's television news and current affairs. That's really significant. And it does that, provides, still reaches a mass audience. We heard this morning from Claire, you'll hear me sort of say often in this sort of session, I agree with Claire, there's a lot of life left in television news, without question. Our television news ratings in Wales are actually going up and have done for the last 7 years. So there's an awful lot of life left in it. And what it provides is, accurate, impartial information to the people of Wales. It does all of that, at free to viewers and at no direct cost to the taxpayer. And we've committed to do it to 2024. So that of itself is really quite significant. Now, to answer your question, is it going to continue to survive beyond 2024? Is there an appetite for it? Well, I think the thing I would ask around that is it will depend on the degree to which we continue to adapt in a hugely changing world. And let's make no mistake that we are in fact adapting. Television is hugely resilient. The 30-minute news program is still tremendously powerful. And we heard that from Claire this morning, and that will continue to be the case. But whilst that is the case, we are taking all of the values that public service television brings, public service journalism brings, and putting those in the digital space. So accuracy, impartiality, and so on and so forth. We're taking those and putting them in the digital space. And we're growing our digital offer, and we're growing video in the digital space. And I think that in the digital space, trust is a key battleground. And 78% of people trust ITV News. 78%, the figure for newspapers around sort of 10%. And we're taking that trust and we're putting it in the digital space. So when you think of the broadcasters, you don't just think of the TV news, which is clearly very important. You've also got to think about what is it that they're doing online. As Claire's slide said, 48% of people who consume news online are consuming it from the PSBs. So really now I think people need to start thinking of the public service journalism generated by the PSBs as also operating in the digital space. So the broader kind of question then is sort of, okay, so if television has got a long tail to it, that it isn't going to, our screens aren't going to sort of disappear, television news isn't going to disappear off our screens in the next 5, maybe 10 years. We've got time to prepare for a future that's certainly coming, without question. And I think that what we've got to do as sort of policymakers and as opinion formers in this room is we've got to sort of ask ourselves the question, to what degree do we value what Channel 3 brings? And if we can kind of reach some sort of like sense of, right, yes, we do value that, I think that's quite important, because whatever the solutions are going to hold post-2024, they're going to require some form of political will. It's going to require some form of public intervention. That requires political will. And so if we can kind of get a consensus around the value that Channel 3 currently brings, the plurality that it brings, then I think that will provide us with an environment in which we can find some of the solutions to some of these big, big questions about how do you compete against the Googles? How do you compete against the Facebooks? How do you compete against the Netflixes?
We'll come back to that later, but certainly in your case, there needs to be political intervention in a renewal of license and obligation for it to happen. BBC will come to that as well. You were operating commercially. You were trying to make a commercial success
of doing proper journalism with more freedom than the broadcasters have to voice opinions and to campaign. Is there a future for that in Wales? And we won't confuse the decline in newspapers with newspaper brands. So for the purposes of this, we'll acknowledge that Wales Online is growing just as the Western Mail is declining, but that commercial journalism that aspires to be high quality, do you see that surviving?
Well, I mean, there is absolutely no doubt at all in my mind, and I would have thought in anyone's mind, that there is an appetite for news. I mean, that is a given. That will be a given now, that will be a given in 10 years' time. If you look at the way that the social infrastructure works around information, there is a greater appetite for it now than ever before. And it's our role in that to harness that and to grow an audience around that that we can commercialise. So the question for me is there an appetite for news? Is there an appetite for journalism? Is there an appetite for journalism that we can provide a viable business model around. And for me, the answer there is yes. We work extremely hard every day to make sure that that's true. The evidence for that is growing all the time, if you sit in my seat. But what I would say around the debate, and I think it's helpful to look at digital and print as one sort of platform for this purpose, really, because you know surely what's important for us, everyone in this room, everyone involved in policy around information and democracy, is that people have access to information about their communities, about access to their nation, about access to the decisions that affect their lives, both on a large scale and immediate scale. And really, I don't think long term it's helpful to get hung up on whether that's in print or online. What's important, I think, is that we can give people information that they want and need, that we know what the information that they want and need. And the more that we can tune that, the more chance we've got of building a business model. Fundamentally, the business model around commercial journalism is scale and reach. Scale in terms of as large an audience as possible, and local penetration into communities, specific local communities, because that's what those local advertisers would want. Digitally, there is no value at all in growing scale for its own sake. So the whole arguments around clickbait and you know just searching for the next thing that's going to go viral, that will lead us nowhere commercially. What leads us somewhere commercially is being an important part of the everyday lives for the readers in the communities that we serve. That's what we're striving to do. That's what we've always strived to do in print. It's what we'll always strive to do in digital. I think as long as we can achieve that, we will have a future in 10 years' time, in 20 years' time, however much further.
Garamond, how important is it from your perspective at the BBC, where you know there are some people in the BBC who could look at the world and say, actually, it'd be fine if everybody else disappeared because the BBC offers so much. You get it in all shapes and sizes. You get TV, radio, web, social media, it's all there. But do you acknowledge that BBC journalism would suffer without the plurality of voice and indeed the sort of hardcore, close to the ground sort of news hounding that is usually more associated with newspapers than with broadcasting?
Yeah, absolutely. The BBC needs competition. Journalism is a competitive. It's a competitive profession, and it is sometimes one of the frustrations I felt in my career in journalism in Wales, because we haven't got this the plural marketplace you have in Scotland, and when you do break a story, there isn't a momentum behind that story. There aren't necessarily a multitude of outlets, and I'm sure it's the same from Wales Online's and ITV's perspective. There isn't that multitude of outlets to take that story on. But yes, the BBC does. I think it's worth restating what the BBC does. We deliver service, daily news services across online, television, and radio in Welsh and English, and a wide range of weekly programmes. And going back to the first point on demand, I think there is a positive story to be told. Television's been remarkably resilient. Wales Today is still the most watched news programme in Wales, so it outperforms the 6 and 10. That's got a UK. An international remit. We've seen Newer Than Now on S4C, the audience increasing. And the ITV experience is similar in terms of growth. We've seen Wales Online grow its reach in terms of our digital output. We reach about 3 million people per week through news and sport. And we've also seen Cymru View dramatically increase its reach. So there is a clear demand there.
Emma, when you... We'll come back to community journalism later. But as you look at this, how much appetite on a big day like this, when the big story is so in your face, if you like, how much appetite is there still for that local news? And how local does that get? Does that get down to a Welsh level, or does that get down to a my street level?
Because you're helping. That gets right down to, if you look at the work the hyperlocals do, and I do urge you to follow community journalism on C4CJ on Twitter, and we collate lots of this information. And any of the big news events, they do absolutely phenomenal stuff. Take elections and Brexit, for example. It's so important for democracy that people in their own communities know what they can do, how it impacts them. And what hyperlocal and very local community journalists do is they are excellent. It's not just about what's happening in the village hall and when's the school fete. It's about my local election, what matters. It's drilling down, it's doing the stuff, I hate to say, but lots of the other bigger publications are not doing. We've gone back to having patch reporters. What you've got is a network of 500 odd publications where they've got people on the ground, they know what's happening, they go to council meetings, they know the local police officers, and they're the first to the stories. And unfortunately for our sector, we're still fighting to have a level playing field, because we're covering all the stories and they're doing excellent work, and I've asked some of them to send me some statistics, some fabulous stuff. So Wrexham.com just sent me from the end of last year, so just in Wrexham alone, for the last quarter of last year, 3.5 million page views, 82% returning website traffic. They're the number one most engaged audience in the area. Over 55,000 people follow them on social networks. And then on the email it said, we have to remember, this is all done with two people. You know, we run the site, we code bits of it, we write the stories, investigate, read reports, dig stuff, meet people, and do all of this stuff, and it's two people. And it's really important that we support this sector, because they are plugging the democratic deficit. We're doing lots of work with the Assembly for Wales. They recognise the value that our sector has to offer. And, you know, we heard of Welsh Government giving, you know, £350,000 to NewsQuest a few weeks ago to safeguard 50 jobs. And what I would argue is, if you can imagine, rather than giving it to one company who have systematically been cutting jobs left, right and centre, and in that same period they had the funding, made £60 million profit, if you divided that across all the local and community news publishers across Wales, if you see the work they do with one or two staff, imagine what they could do with three or four. And I think we need to stop looking at, we need to stop thinking in terms of newspapers and start thinking in terms of news publishers, and start thinking about, you know, it's quite an archaic way of looking at it. If we do look at digital, you know, readership is increasing, but the engagement maybe, as Claire said earlier, is not as great as it should be.
Can I jump in? You said community journalists, but, you know, we live in an age where anyone can blog, express a view, anyone can take a picture and post it. Does that make them a journalist? Does that make them a columnist? Does that make them a broadcaster? Or is there a distinction, which I happen to think it is, between that, worthy though it is, and professional journalism, where people are trained, people sign up to a code of ethics and a standard of operation? There's a difference, isn't there, between what you describe and professional journalism?
There is, but I would say, looking at our sector, I know for a fact that a huge number of people in our sector are qualified journalists who have lost their jobs in mainstream media. So if you look at the Talbot Magnet, for example, there were seven, they were a cooperative of seven journalists who all lost their jobs in mainstream media. The Talbot Guardian had closed down, and overnight an entire town, a whole community, lost access to any local news or information. So the way they knew that they were going to experiment with closing the M4 road going into the junction going into Talbot, where somebody graffitied it on the wall. That's just not good enough for communities to know these days. That is the lifeline of traffic in and out of Talbot, and the way the community found out about it was graffiti. So, you know, it's really important. We need local journalists, otherwise you're going to end up with a whole sea of spotted Facebook pages with people saying anything they want. And that's why we as a centre set up, Professor Justin Lewis, who was the head of school at the time, said he was fed up of going to conferences and everyone were wailing about the death of journalism and the closure of papers, and said, but look at this new emerging landscape, why don't we do something about it? So we've got two missions. One is to create more jobs for journalists at a local level, and two, to make sure the standard of local journalism is the best it can be. So as a centre, they've got somewhere to come to for advice and support. And we're just on the cusp of setting up a new representative body, which is a UK-wide representative body called ICNN, Independent Community News Network. And this is to provide a voice for the sector. It's a very diverse sector, and there's dozens of different business models, and trying to bring that together and show there's value in this sector. So ICNN's going to... all members will adhere to the editor's code of practice, which comes back to what you were saying about, you know, professionalism. All our, we've got, you know, we'll all have access to a complaint, a robust complaints procedure. We'll have access to legal support, backroom tech support. So anything you would have. I worked with the BBC for nearly 14 years. We could ring, you know, editorial policy or the legal support teams with your teams as well. So our sector has the same opportunity. So professionalism, I wouldn't question it at all. It's just a level playing field.
Phil, what do you think of that?
Well, I think in terms of the sort of professional journalist sort of aspect, it's two things I'd sort of say. A lot of the conversation already has been about kind of how relevant are we? So we kind of quote statistics and we quote sort of viewership and so on and so forth. And they're all kind of really positive. The, sort of the second aspect to this is, but then is what is the quality of what it is that people are watching? And if I was to sort of like say, well, what's been a sort of a change in this? In some ways, the 30-minute pro news program is exactly as it was. It's a 30-minute news program. But the reform within there, I think the change has been is a kind of an assumption that we're not sort of telling people the news necessarily for the first time. That they will have feasted somewhere else or snacked somewhere else, and they'll kind of know what the news is. And what I think you will find if you watch our programme now compared to, say, 10 years ago, this is probably more expert analysis, there's probably more contextualisation from, as you say, professional journalists who are absolutely trained in sort of spotting what's right and what's wrong, being able to sort of say, yes, there's the picture, but this is the story behind the picture. You know, you've got people such as Carol Green, Adrian Masters, and BBC correspondents. I think that trust in this space is really important. And again, sort of underlying all of this is yes, the viewership is up, but the quality of what we do is also as high as I think it's ever been. And if it wasn't, I don't think the viewership would be as high as it is. So our balance, our trick, as it were, is almost like trying to ride three horses, is that we're sort of trying to maintain our relevance in a fast-changing environment. We're trying to maintain the quality, both for a sort of investigations and quality sort of journalism, and at the same time, we're trying to reach those audiences that we know are no longer consuming TV news in the digital space and taking our values of public service journalism into that space. And that's quite a trick, but actually, when you look at across the BBC and so on, so I think we're actually pulling it off, would be my overall message.
Isn't the danger, Ganmon, because Claire Enders also had a slide, I didn't see the presentation, but I saw her slides, that the proportion of news that people in Wales consume, that it is about Wales as opposed to about somewhere else, is still very small. And isn't there the danger that Welsh news, including what you do at the BBC, gets squeezed between the big global stories, the big news of Brexit or Trump or whatever, and the local news that is being done, you know, by amateurs or some who can earn a slight living from it, but somewhere in the middle there, you're neither fish nor fowl. What is the danger of that over the years ahead?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there is that danger. And for us, you know, we've started a conversation about the volume of stories we produce, and should we tweak that and put more resources into the stories that really matter? Should we put more resources into creating more space to develop original journalism? Should we focus more on the stuff that breaks through, that's distinctive, rather than go for volume and necessarily, you know, distinctiveness between each and every programme? And in terms of, you know, the direction of travel, you know, it's similar to ITV. As part of Charter reinvestment, we're looking to increase the range and depth of our specialist reporters. We're also looking to be more ambitious online to try and grab the attention of that younger audience that we're not currently as effective in meeting.
Paul, do you see it as a blessing or a curse when the BBC put more resource into local news?
Well, I completely agree with what Gavin said earlier about competitive environment, and you know, for me as a Welshman, you know, the more resource there is in the media in Wales, the better. I mean, I wouldn't say for a second it'd be better for us to run down the BBC, so therefore we've got a free run at the goal. You know, that's completely counterproductive. And you know, what I think is what I'd like to see more of, and it's fascinating to hear what Emma's saying, really, because I think what we've actually growing in Wales is a new news landscape. Which actually has got a lot of encouraging signs, and what I don't see probably enough of, you know, which I would institutionally take as much responsibility for as anywhere else, is enough collaboration between those organisations. But just going back to a point that that Gavin was making now about volume, I think, you know, one of the I think empowering and energising aspects of online journalism that certainly has been evidenced in our newsroom is when you are able to know exactly, have real-time feedback on what your audiences are doing and responding to and talking about, reading, sharing, then that changes the tone of your journalism for the better. I think, you know, talking about volume, you know, doing less better is a phrase that we use quite a lot in our newsroom, and you know, and getting away from the fact that, you know, there's no point writing 500 stories if people aren't going to read 495 mm-hmm. of them, you know, because really we can talk about closing democratic deficits all we like, but if you're writing something and nobody's reading it, then it doesn't achieve anything. And so we put a great deal of store into looking at what are the subjects that we think are important and what are the ways that people are responding to. And and how can we change what we do to take that into account? And so for me, I think that helps our journalism, helps our print journalism, because if we know what, you know, really is a you know, if you're seeing a newspaper sales meeting and your paper's sold well, you've got no way of knowing really, apart from, you know, you make assumptions based on what the splash was that day or what the weather was like and various other things. You've got no real way of knowing what the appetite was for any given story in that paper. Now we know exactly what our audiences are reading, responding to, what's important to them, and we can do more of them. And I think, you know, in almost any sector, intelligent use of data is really important. And I think that's something that's come into journalism really helpfully in terms of, you know, it's easy to characterize that as maths ahead of community engagement, but it's a way of engagement in our communities that we've never had before.
Is the problem, because I want to move from the professionalism to plurality, is the problem with Welsh journalism not the lack of professionalism but the lack of plurality? Because you represent a newspaper group, but it is a group that is now virtually a monopoly across Wales. These two gentlemen represent hugely powerful news organisations, but what you have just across the border and drifting over into Wales, of course, is a fierce, brutal, competitive environment where you have newspapers that are devoting, you know, a fortune into beating each other to the stories and reflecting different points of view. And the BBC and ITV are rightly constrained from being that brutal in holding politicians to account, in advocacy. In interrogation may be okay, but in advocacy of things. And doesn't that make Welsh journalism ultimately a little bit soft? Which may or may not be a good thing.
I mean, possibly. What I would say is, I can't. You know, we can't account for what we are. You know, what we are and what we're not. You know, and we can't account for the fact there aren't other newspaper groups operating. But I think, in terms of pluralism, which is a word I always struggle to say, I think, you know, yes, in terms of newspaper groups, that is an issue. Well, it's not an issue. It's a fact. But, you know, this is about a new landscape. You know, what is undoubtedly true is the media is in a period of flux, transition, disruption, call it whatever you want, and we are moving from a way of information being shared and disseminated in a way that hadn't changed for centuries and decades, and is rapidly going through a complete transformation, which is changing the landscape beyond recognition. And we are in the middle of that right now. And so, in terms of, you know, have we got multiple sources of news? Maybe not to the level we would like, but they're growing. And you know, is there a way we can make sure they have a sustainable future in a commercial sense? Well, I think that's what we need to sort out. And when we look at, you know, whether it's public funding or commercial models, I would be, you know, we are more than happy to get involved with conversations about how we can make that work and share those learnings to make that happen.
If you're a politician in Wales, and there are some present here, they'd probably disagree with me. But it's a bit of an easy ride, relatively speaking, because you know that the dominant journalistic tradition in Wales will never actually put a foot in your door, will never actually go through your bins, God forbid, will actually probably suppress a load of the kind of stories because they don't pass the high bar of public interest. And if you turn down the opportunity to be interviewed by them, they won't give you a hard time for it forevermore. Nobody else will either. And is that a danger in the end, that you, when you began your career at Golwg, could probably be more of a pain in the backside for a Welsh politician than you can now in the high office that you hold in BBC Wales, constrained by objectivity and ethics and all the decent things that the BBC subscribes to?
Yes, I agree. You know, it is a challenge. I mean, in terms of, you know, you look at a major political story you're breaking in Westminster, you'll see those journalists camped outside. If the BBC was to camp outside, you know, a politician's home, it'd be seen as a major step.
And there's no one else to fill the gap in Wales. So it's right that the BBC, having spent 18 years of my life at the BBC, I don't want to see the BBC camped outside my door. It doesn't belong there. But nobody else will do it either, because you won't do it, because you subscribe to the same ethics. And you don't have the resource to do it. So nobody does it.
Yes, but
so if I'm going to be a politician anywhere, and that's not about my intentions, you know, this would surely be the best place to come and, you know, set up shop.
Yeah.
And yet they keep telling me that there's a democratic deficit. And I did say this when challenged on this, why doesn't the London media pay attention to us? I said, careful what you wish for.
But the second part of my answer was, you know, despite that cultural change, I think it's, you know, unfair to characterise the BBC as giving politicians an easy ride. You know, if you look at our output, if you look at the original stories we break, if you look at the investment we put into current affairs, to original journalism, there is real scrutiny coming from the BBC. It's not just observational journalism in the way you're kind of characterising. I think the BBC do.
So here's
do
something
people
that we're discussing that has happened today. Firing pistol has been, you know, has gone off. We're leaving the European Union. That may or may not be a bad thing for the UK. But in Wales, it seems to me, with a freedom outside the BBC to say it, that walking away from that access to a market for £2 billion worth between now and 2020 in sort of aid to Wales is insane. And yet I don't remember feeling in the run-up to the referendum in Wales that journalism in Wales was rigorous enough and in your face enough so that people woke up to that. People genuinely woke up Googling the European Union to find out what they had moronically voted against. Yes, I'm free to express my point of view. And isn't that the real democratic deficit in Wales, is that hampered by, rightfully, the objective professional codes that you abide by, that there was not a voice in Wales, there was not a journalism in Wales that was rigorous enough for the people of Wales to be aware of what they were doing?
Look, you know, we are brought up to be impartial. We are.
Me too for 18 years. It's great when you can give it up.
Instinctively, we ask ourselves the question, what is the other side to this story? And I think you could go back through ITV Wales output in the lead up to the referendum, and on both sides of the argument, where outlandish claims were made, we would put back to them, you know, that sort of sense of fact checking and so on and so forth. And that's where the professionalism actually kind of comes in. I think that's worth us sort of saying that. I would absolutely echo what Garman says. So, you know, this sort of like world where we are passively sort of sitting back and letting this happen. That's not a world that I sort of inherit.
But there's no advocacy of causes. There's no campaigning for things other than charity.
No, but look, but there's sort of two aspects to this, isn't there? Look, if you sort of take a worldview that sort of says, well, look, if people are choosing what it is that they want to consume, they can just choose, you know, one side of the argument. Now, if you watch a half-hour news program, you're not going to get just one side of the argument. So there's value in what it is that we do, that we are, in fact, presenting both sides of the argument. We're not just sort of like saying, these are the stories that we think are going to be popular. We are also choosing stories. These are the stories we think are going to be important. So I don't agree with your analysis. I do not agree either that actually we should sacrifice that impartiality, because I think in the digital space, there are going to be many partial views, and actually somewhere that you can go to get context, to get trust, and get rigour is absolutely what the public service broadcaster should be there to do.
I'm going to turn to the audience, but Emma, first of all, I'm not advocating that you give that up, but wouldn't journalism produced by this duopoly in Wales, this powerful duopoly, benefit from having more of a, you know, those voices of advocacy, some of them insane perhaps, some of them aggressive, some of them brutal, some of them unpleasant? Wouldn't the overall effect of journalism across the board in Wales be to raise our game and to sharpen it a lot if there was more of that?
Well, I think, and looking at our sector, you do get that because you know we've got small independent publishers, and some of them are very strong-willed. I know I deal with them on a daily basis, and lots of them have various different opinions, and actually they do some fantastic work, and that's why, you know, I find it quite frustrating when we're talking about the big guns. And there's, you know, there are if you do look at the content that's been published on a very local level, there's some excellent work being done, and the plurality of voices are much greater. It's really, I can't stress enough how diverse the sector is, and what we need to do is to find a way of bringing all this together to give everyone, I know I keep saying a level playing field, but actually making sure that they've got the same opportunities, because from small acorns, big oak trees grow. And at the moment, we just need to make sure that it's not just a duopoly, as you say, but that, you know, we give the opportunities for these small, there's lots of small, fantastic examples of brilliant journalism happening right across Wales and the UK. And we just need to give them the opportunity to grow into something bigger, to make sure that we do continue to have plurality of voice on a local level.
And just to prove that I'm interested in plurality, who wants to ask the first question? Should we go to the front? Politician who's...
Ex-politician
who would probably argue you didn't have an easy ride.
Well, you know, I had my house pictures in the Echo. I had the trajectory of my ministerial car journeys in the Echo. So I think there is an element you are missing. But my question wasn't going to be about that. I can see a future for regulated public broadcasting, and I can see a future for community journalism. But if Facebook and Google are taking 90% of the growth in mobile advertising, how does Wales Online survive?
So Wales Online survives, as I mentioned earlier, by growing its scale and growing its reach. Both of those are growing year on year. I think when we're talking about the weakness of the Welsh media, what's never discussed. So Wales Online, it's just worth pointing out, is the fourth biggest, regional, and that's how it's classified because it's not a UK-wide publisher, the fourth biggest regional website, news website in the UK, commercial news website in the UK. It is consistently among the fastest growing. It's consistently among the most engaged with and fastest growing on social. It's, you say 90% of a fairly large pot, and there is growth. Our digital revenues are growing. They will continue to grow. We model that all the time. You know, we are getting increasingly sophisticated ways of monetizing the audience that we have. There are models we can experiment with that we haven't even touched on yet, things like freemium or paywalled. So, you know, I don't see why suddenly, you know, we've been battling Google and Facebook for several years now. I don't see why suddenly that tap's going to get turned off next year when our expertise in terms of growing that business model will continue to grow with our audience.
I should also add, you know, obviously Facebook doesn't present us with an advertising or funding challenge, but it does give us a prominence challenge that we've never faced before. So the control, the continued growth of Google and Facebook have over people's access to journalism, over the visibility of our stories, is something that's new to us because we've always broadcast on our own platforms, and suddenly we're at the mercy of the ever-changing algorithms of these global corporations. So it's a challenge for us as well. It's a more acute challenge for Wales Online because of the funding, but I think it's a challenge for everybody.
Quick follow-up on that with advertising. Isn't the problem that people are chasing ever-segmented audiences? So you can't find the scale of a segmented audience in Wales because we're simply not big enough. You could find scale and you could segment, but when you segment the audience in the increasingly demanding way that you know advertisers are obsessed with, you end up with audiences that are simply too small because there aren't enough of us.
Yeah, I mean, what we're finding, a typical conversation we'll have with an advertiser will be around reach, local penetration, and a trusted voice authority in that community. You know, so it's about contextualism. An advert on Google, albeit for that will be a pay per click when you search for a given product, but it's just sitting there. It's clearly an advert. All our market research shows, all our user feedback shows that when we are servicing adverts for relevant local advertisers with relevant local content, they have a far better click through rate, far better response for the reader than you know advertising on Google and Facebook. And that's the message we need to get to local advertisers.
I'm going to get a few more questions in and bounce them around. But can I tell them?
Just quite a question for Paul, because you talked about sort of, you know, reach, scale, and reach. I'm slightly mystified. There was a piece of information that Claire Enders put up first thing this morning, where there was this huge bar chart showing your sort of unique users, and there was this dot at the bottom, which actually showed sort of, you know, time spent, and I was left, you know, wondering, you know, where this leaves the argument, because the unique user figure is the figure that's been used sort of time and again, and I was almost asking myself at the end of that presentation whether more people would actually see a story in your 15,000 circulation Western Mail than would actually read it, you know, in your 4 million unique users, and somewhere in all your data, there must be an answer to that.
Yeah. So I'm really pleased you asked that, because I was not so much. I was not in any way taken aback by that chart. What you saw in that chart were, was unique user figures. And I think actually for Wales to have a brand which is up there with Google and Facebook in terms of how many people it reaches is a pretty good thing for the Welsh media. And what you had also was engaged time. And if you look, it wasn't just Wales Online that had a dot right at the bottom. It was also the Daily Post and the South African Post and BBC Wales and all the news sites in there. And the answer to that is because people use social platforms like Facebook and Twitter, Facebook and Google and Twitter, which are the ones that were right at the top in a completely different way. If you think about the way you use Facebook, you often, you know, increasingly people now use it as the front page of their news provision. So they will go onto it, click a few different links, go onto a site, come off it, go to somewhere else, see what their friends are doing, see what their friends are eating for dinner, and do it several times a day. Now, that's not how people use news sites. That's not to say that the time they spend on our news pages aren't valuable. It's just a completely different point of comparison. So if the question is, are more people seeing stories in the Western Mail than they are on Wales Online, I'm afraid the answer is no by a factor of, you know, 10 or 15 on most.
Right, I'm going to try and race through a few more questions. Go with Hugh Robertson.
Monetization of news is when you raised it, and that's a question I want to ask. This discussion about the quality of journalism, the discussion of the quality of journalists is all very well, but we are primarily talking about two bodies that are being funded, one by advertising, one by the license fee. It seems to me that there's not enough thought going into how you can make greater income from news online on air. I do remember, it's a very long time ago, but when I was at ITN, there was at least one piece of work that demonstrated that the news actually got to a group of the audience, this segment, that was otherwise very difficult to get to. But what they were not able to do at ITN was monetize that because of the obligations they had, the amount of advertising time that should be around news.
I'm going to ask Emma to answer that one.
Well, that's what I would like to hear, is whether you think community opportunities would allow them to monetize more of their news outlets.
Yeah, there's, I mean, money at a local level is difficult. Coming back to advertising, local businesses still want to reach a local audience. And when you're talking about local, it comes, you know, I'm not being mean, but, you know, when a couple of weeks after the Evening Post closes its website to amalgamate its audience with Wales Online. So when you're talking about local advertising, where does the local butcher in Swansea advertise?
Suburban level
in the pages,
so yeah.
Because what the audience we've got, we are finding more community publishers are going back into print. We're helping an awful lot of them go back into print because local businesses understand the value of eyeballs on a piece of paper. If they know that 10,000 copies go out into 10,000 homes and another 2,000 in local shops and libraries, they understand that far more than eyes on a website. So we're still trying to shoehorn a traditional advertising model into a digital era, so it's almost as if somebody needs to come along with a completely new model. But it's a really successful one. There's cooperatives, there's social enterprises, there's people working on advertising, writing and selling stories. So there's a huge variety of different business models on a local level, and it's really interesting to see how many more going back into print because these local advertisers still want to get in front of a local audience.
Time for a few more.
Hiya, Hugh Marshall from Our Cymru. We're currently working on trying to develop a platform at a newyddion on Twitter, if you look at it, which looks at creating a Welsh language platform, but primarily targeting 16 to 35 year olds that are accessing their news in social media spaces, Facebook and Twitter. I was glad to hear you all say that you're keen to cooperate and work with people, so I was just offering that invitation. Do you want to work with us as an independent body to actually develop that platform, because I think it is key. Unless people support and work together, we're not going to develop these platforms.
I'm going to treat that as an invitation, not a question, and then we'll go to the gentleman over there and then to this gentleman here.
I thought today we could briefly look back to, and it goes in that sense, of public service broadcasting and balance and how that informs, and looking back the binary nature of the referendum, when balance seemed to me eventually to be against any sense of understanding on context, because I made programs in that period and watched many, and it was on one hand this, on the other hand that, and I was confused. 350 million here, 250 million there. Well, and then I saw a couple of news programs on the BBC, ITV, correspondents put on the spot initially, so which is right? And of course they couldn't answer it. Oh, well, of course, on one hand this, on one hand that. There's when they're going forward, when most people now, and more people are getting their news through Facebook, which is reinforcing their opinions, does public service broadcast need to be more opinionated in its correspondence and take a position of belief that it's not on one hand this and on one hand that, and you might say that and you might not say that? Because does that not chime into what we're becoming a binary nation of yes and no?
Cameron, you're let off because Phil volunteered to answer this one.
I think it comes back for me to that sort of sense of the trust that you can place in people. So, you know, Peston probably went further than most within the rules in which we operate to sort of put forward a view, if you see what I'm saying, based on their expertise. But there's no doubt that the referendum threw up sort of two issues, really. One, the issue that you're quite rightly sort of like saying, you could spend 2 minutes in a package doing a really kind of like, you know, news report, doing a really detailed sort of analysis of one sort of side of the argument. And then you have to go to the other side, because instinctively you have to, and they say, it's a load of rubbish, and you carry it. And so what does the audience learn from that? Is it really a load of rubbish, et cetera, et cetera. So I absolutely take the point on that. I think that the sort of the trust of our correspondents and building in that trust and that analysis into our formats is perhaps a little bit of a counter, but we operate within the regulatory system we do.
Isn't the bigger problem here you're asked to reflect Joe Public on the street, rightly,
yeah,
so that people hear vox pops and they see themselves, but it's hard to sort of get the right weighting for the view of Joe Bloggs in the street and the Governor of the Bank of England and whether Brexit is a good idea or not.
But what I was going to say, but I think the bigger problem of all is as you say, that most people pretty much can access news, not now via newspapers or the sort of the impartial broadcasters. They get it straight to their social media sites. And more to the point, there are organisations out there that know that. And they know, better perhaps than most people in this room, how to reach certain segments of the population with a certain point of view that population might be receptive to. And we have no idea that they are doing it. Only Google know that they're doing it. Only Facebook know that they're doing it. We don't know that they're doing it. So when a politician sits in front of one of my presenters and says something completely outrageous, I will expect my presenter to say, that's completely outrageous and this is why. But when an organisation sends something completely outrageous, whatever side of the argument it might be, to somebody in their newsfeed, nobody's calling that out. And more to the point, nobody knows it's actually taken place. And I think that, from the referendum, is the biggest lesson that we should all be sort of thinking about. When we think about Google and Facebook, they are completely unregulated. They keep all of the information they have about their audience to themselves. And they create no content whatsoever. And they hollow out all of the revenues that supports the journalism that everybody in this room values. And I think that is the biggest big picture. Sort
parasites,
of thing
I think
say.
Is the word you
I didn't say.
Gentleman there, and then to the front there.
Thank you. Lewis Horne-Jones, I'm an anchor for ITV News up in London. On the question, journalism surviving, I want to ask about journalists, because obviously it can't survive without them. I want to echo slightly Gitto's point, my experience working here in Wales and up in London. There is a very different culture in London. It is a lot more sharp elbows and a lot more angry. Is there, I want to ask the panel, have you attracted journalists from London, from around the world, a diversity of top journalists? If you haven't, are you worried about that? Do you care?
Come on.
It's an ambition, yes. Can I name now a long list of people who've returned from London? No, I can't. But you know, I think we do need to be more ambitious in the kind of journalists we target. I think we are suffering slightly from the increasing lure of London. More people, more young people in particular, are leaving just experienced lifestyle in London in their 20s. But you know, we do anticipate that those people will return with greater experience and greater skills.
Audrey.
Just 2 points. One, just to, I think you touched on it, Gitta, at the start, about the issue of the amount of news coverage coming from alternative UK sources. And I think there is a real and quite profound issue around Welsh news's share of market or share of attention. So I think that issue plays out when you think about Google and you think about the major technological platforms, how public service content finds space and attention and comes to people's attention in that space, I think it's a critical issue. I just caution on this issue around Brexit, in the sense that I think that there's a lot of good evidence around that a significant number of people that voted to leave did so in the knowledge that it would likely be economically damaging. They did it despite
a level of understanding around that issue. And I think the same might be said of the Trump election, that actually the rigor of the US press, particularly in the last few months of the US election, was pretty extensive, didn't seem to have an awful lot of impact on the final results. So I think we've got to be careful of reading perhaps our desired outcomes against people not having the information to hand. I think a number of people had the information to hand and still chose to do what we might regard as the making the wrong choice. And the third thing I was just going to support, which is I think there is an absolutely, you're spot on, I think, to the extent that Wales needs specialist journalists who are brave and confident enough to call it. And I think this issue of impartiality, absolutely we need to stay within our regulatory structures, but when I hear Fliss or I hear Ollie at his best on Good Morning Wales, there is if you have the right information and the right insight, you can still hold people to account and make their lives difficult. And there is no reason on earth why the BBC and ITV should not be in the business of making politicians' lives difficult.
Sean, I'm afraid our time is up. One reflection from me in view of the competition as we now see it, and the slide from Claire Enders this morning, maybe if we do this debate again, if they exist, there should be a Welsh voice from Facebook. Is there a Welsh face to Facebook? Is there Bute in BuzzFeed? Is there a sort of, is there a guitar at Google? apart from me, Gmail. But maybe the challenge has been, because one of the justifications when hammered, as I have been at times, for working across the border for most of my journalistic career, is the reality that most Welsh people do turn across the border for most of their news about the world. And if you don't have Welsh people in those organisations, then Welsh people, apart from anyone else, suffer from the lack of that perspective. And if news globally is going to the west coast of America and wherever else the next exciting thing happens, then surely the challenge here is not only to bring good journalists to Wales, but to send great journalists from Wales to those places even further afield than 150 miles up the M4. I'll leave you with that thought. I'd like to thank our panel and thank you all very much for your time.